Take back the city for yourself tonight. I'll take back the city for me. Take back the city for yourself tonight. Whoa, whoa.
Welcome to Third Paradigm, a radio blog about community sovereignty and regenerative economics. We look at how to take back our cities, farmland, and water, our money, production, and trade, our media, education, and culture, our religion, and even our God. We present a people's history of the Bible and a parent's view on how to raise giving kids in a taking world. I'm your host, Teresa Caraggio, broadcasting through Free Radio Santa Cruz, WHCL Hamilton College, New York, and Upstart Radio Online.
I love this place enough to have no doubt. Whoa, whoa.
Welcome to the 26th episode of Third Paradigm, which marks our half-year anniversary. This week, we'll talk about the pending Panama Free Trade Agreement. But I'd like to start by continuing the line of inquiry started last week when we asked whether the U.S. Constitution was an act of treason. In that episode, we looked at the underhanded way in which the Constitution was drafted, at a convention on trade and legal tender, to which commercial delegates, not congressional delegates, had been sent. We looked at the 20-year reprieve that the Constitution gave slavery, and the slave tax and additional slaveholder representation it authorized that kept slavery going 30 years beyond the date it promised to phase it out. I just read an article that derided Thomas Jefferson for considering blacks only three-fifths human. I'm no fan of Jefferson, but in terms of representation in Congress, it would have been better if they'd been considered not human at all. For each non-voting male slave to count as three-fifths of a free man meant that an owner of 1,000 slaves carried the same political weight as 601 abolitionists. Likewise, the tax on slaves wasn't a compromise or a step in the direction of abolition. It made the new government complicit and dependent on a revenue stream for something that should have been illegal. Once the money was accepted, slavery was legitimized, and abolition took money away that Congress depended on. The 20-year reprieve, where slaveholders agreed to voluntarily phase out slavery by 1808, is much like the Harkins and Engel Protocol today. In 2001, due to media exposés about child slaves on cocoa plantations, legislation was introduced by Senators Harkins and Engel to force chocolate products to be certified and labeled slave-free. To avoid this, the chocolate industry negotiated to phase out child slavery voluntarily by 2005. 2005 came and went with no real change, just as the Constitution's 1808 deadline slipped by without a murmur. High tech pulled the same trick again when a 2001 UN report showed that coltan, found in every cell phone and laptop, was funding the atrocities in the Congo. First, they sponsored so-called independent journalists who shared the public's outrage. Then they said, "Now that we know, it's certain that this won't continue." And then it does. If you'd like my research on the coltan issue, drop me a note at teresa@retrometro.com. But before we post the sovereignty news, we'll read a poem. This is What's Left by Carrie Hardy and dedicated to Peter Hennessy. The music that follows it is Snow Patrol with Hands Open. What's Left? I used to wait for the flowers. My pleasure reposed on them. Now I like plants before they get to the blossom. Leafy ones, foxgloves, comfrey, delphiniums, fleshy tiers of strong leaves pushing up into air, grown daily lighter and more sheened with bright dust, like the eyeshadow that tall young woman in the bookshop wears. It shimmer and crumble on her white lids. The washing sways on the line. The sparrows pull at the heaps of drying weeds that I've left around. Perhaps this is middle age. Untidy, unfinished. Knowing there'll never be time now to finish. Liking the plants, their strong lives, not caring about flowers. Sitting in weeds to write things down, look at things. Watching the sway of shirts on the line, the cloth filtering light. I know, more or less, how to live through my life now, but I want to know how to live what's left. With my eyes open and my hands open, I want to stand at the door in the rain, listening, sniffing, gaping, fearful and joyous, like an idiot before God. Carrie Hardy from Cry for the Hot Belly.
It's hard to argue when you won't stop making sense, but my tongue still misbehaves and it keeps digging my own grave with my hands open and my eyes open. I just keep hoping that you're Stevens on, and we'll play your favorite song. Chicago bursts to life, and your sweet smile remembers you. My hands open, and my eyes open. I just keep hoping that you're.
That was Snow Patrol, who does our theme song, Take Back the City. This one is called Hands Open from the CD Eyes Open. Although it's romantic, it's also politically true. It's not as easy as willing it all to be right. Today, on Mother's Day at San Lorenzo Park, is an exhibit of 455 empty pairs of combat boots called Eyes Wide Open. They're tagged with the names of the California soldiers who've died in the Iraq War, along with a visual representation of hundreds of thousands of Iraqi civilians who've died in the invasion. It's co-sponsored by the American Friends Service Committee and the Resource Center for Nonviolence. I saw this exhibition when it was in D.C., and it's very powerful. Given Julia Ward Howe's intent for Mother's Day, I thought there was no more fitting activity that I could ask my family to do. I'd like to now play the dramatic reading of Julia Ward Howe's proclamation that was replayed on Democracy Now!
Mother's Day really was, in its origin, an anti-war day, an anti-war statement. Julia Ward Howe was sickened by what had happened during the Civil War, the loss of life, the carnage, and she created Mother's Day as a call for women all over the world to come together and create ways of protesting war, of making a kind of alternate government that could finally do away with war as an acceptable way of solving conflict.
Arise then, women of this day. Arise, all women who have hearts. Whether your baptism be of water or of tears,
say firmly, we will not have questions answered by irrelevant agencies.
Our husbands will not come to us reeking of carnage for caresses and applause.
Our sons shall not be taken from us to unlearn all that we have been able to teach them of charity, mercy, and patience. We,
the women of one country, are too tender to those of another country to allow our sons to be trained to injure theirs. From the bosom of the devastated earth, a voice goes up with our own. It says disarm.
Disarm.
Disarm. The sword of murder is not the balance of justice.
Blood does not wipe out dishonor, nor violence indicate possession. As men have
often forsaken the plow and the anvil at the summons of war, let women now leave all that may be left of home for a great and earnest day of council.
Let them meet first as women to bewail and commemorate the dead.
Let them solemnly take counsel with each other as to the means whereby the great human family can live in peace.
Each bearing after his own time the sacred impress
not of Caesar, but of God.
In the name of womanhood and humanity, I earnestly ask that a general congress of women without limit of nationality
may be appointed and held at some place deemed most convenient.
And at the earliest period consistent with its objects.
To promote the alliance of the different nationalities.
The amicable settlement of international questions.
The great and general interest of peace.
That was a dramatic reading of Julia Ward Howe's original Mother's Day proclamation. Most well known for writing the Battle Hymn of the Republic, she was married to a hero of the Greek Revolution, was a member of the Unitarian Church and the Free Soil Party, who were abolitionists. Walt Whitman was another free soiler. Now for the sovereignty news. This month, Obama met his first test of where the rhetoric meets the road, the fifth summit of the Americas in Trinidad, Tobago. The Eagle's landing didn't bode well for equality. Five heads of state, including Canada's prime minister, were forced to wait up to 3 hours before deplaning while security cleared the tarmac for Obama. Apparently, you can't trust anyone these days. Besides the controversial handshake, Chavez presented Obama with a book, The Open Veins of Latin America. Prior to the summit, Venezuela had hosted the Bolivarian Alternative for Our Americas, or ALBA. Other members of ALBA are Cuba, Dominica, Honduras, Nicaragua, and Bolivia. In a document called the Declaration of Cumana, they rejected the official draft for the Summit of the Americas on the grounds that it provided no answers to the global economic crisis and that it unfairly excluded Cuba. They announced their intent to hold a thorough debate on capitalism as leading humanity and the planet to extinction. They're developing a system among themselves that intends to recover the human condition of societies and peoples and doesn't reduce them to mere consumers or merchandise. In a succinct manner, they gave a clear-sighted view of U.S. interventionist policies and its results. They state their hope that Obama will change this destructive path, but make it clear that they're not holding their breath. The Declaration of Cumana is an important position statement that everyone should read, whether out of interest in Latin America or for a glimpse of our own future. They quote the liberator, Simón Bolívar, in saying, "Unity of our peoples is not a mere illusion of men, but an inexorable decree of destiny. Let's hope the U.S. gets on the right side of destiny by then." It is, however, unlikely that Brand Obama will lead us there. Sorry, Obama fans. On Truthdig, Chris Hedges lists the ways in which Brand Obama is a feel-good perception without substantive change from the last presidential product. As soon as the America summit was over, his aides signaled that he wouldn't seek to renegotiate NAFTA and that China shouldn't be labeled a currency manipulator in keeping the yuan artificially low to keep exports high. These are both reversals of statements Obama made on the campaign trail. The day of his return, he signaled an openness to free trade agreements with Panama and Colombia, which are fiercely opposed by the ALBA countries and all indigenous and peasant communities. At the summit, he never mentioned it. You can practically hear the pedestal cracking. Trade activists thought they just had to delay the FTAs through Bush's last days as a lame duck. Well, there's a new duck in the house, but just as lame. He may try to push the trade deal through before the May 22nd recess of Congress. What's so bad about the Panama Free Trade Agreement? Let's hear from the Panamanian Sovereignty Front. It would permit the United States access to the internal market of Panama. In exchange, the U.S. does not offer any opening for Panamanian goods or services to gain access to their market. The people would have to assume the burden of higher prices for health care, education, social security, transportation, and food. Panamanian farmers would lose their access to the national market and would have to abandon their land. The Panamanian market would be inundated with U.S. farm products that are in surplus in that country. Our country would be totally abandoning its policy of food security, and we would not be consuming our own rice, beef, and other products. So maybe it's news to you that the U.S. has a food surplus. I just heard that 3.5 million U.S. children may be developmentally stunted due to hunger in the next few years. Food pantries have strict rationing due to unprecedented demand. Why are we so eager to ship food to Panama? We're not only eager, we're paying twice to do it. First, we pay farm subsidies to the agribusiness giants who grow 5 staple crops: wheat, corn, rice, soy, and cotton. Then, under the auspices of USAID, we pay the shipping cartels to send it to third world countries where it's sold at under the cost of production as a charitable act. Agro-businesses get paid again, which they can use to buy up the farmers' land cheap after they can't compete and are driven out of business. We'll return with the other reasons a Panama FTA hurts us and really, really hurts them. But in the meantime, Brett Denon says it best, it's enough to make you go crazy.
You know it's hard to be yourself, free yourself, to see yourself. When all around you there are lies, just to get you spies, just to get you to buy so they can get you. There are cameras in the sky, lasers in our living rooms. There are wolves watching, wearing sheep's costumes. It's enough to make you go crazy. Oh. It's enough to make you mad. It's enough to make you go crazy. Oh. Hey. And I'm amazed I haven't yet. Treat each other, beat each other. It's a shame the way we use one another, abuse one another, and screw one another. Is true, they will lock you up in prison, but they won't call it slavery. There are stolen children raised and trained in armies. It's enough to make you go crazy. It's enough to make.
That was Brett Denon with Make You Crazy from his Hope for the Hopeless CD. I played that track on my trial show, and it was a contender for the theme song, but someone tripped over the wire and lost the recording, so Take Back the City won by a nose. Getting back to what drives us crazy, if I had one piece of advice for young activists, it would be to study two things: where the money goes and trade agreements. I know it doesn't sound as sexy as strip mines and torture memos, but this is where it all starts, the first domino. Once the paper's signed and in place, every other domino is on the defensive, requiring a huge mobilization to keep it from falling. There's a coalition out of D.C. called the Alliance for Responsible Trade, run by Tom Loudon of the Quixote Center. Their monthly conference calls include the American Friends Service Committee, Public Citizen Global Trade Watch, the Institute for Policy Studies, the International Labor Rights Forum, Common Frontiers of Canada, and many more. I make myself useful by taking the notes on these calls because I can't believe how much one small committee is holding together. I've compared Tom to the legendary Dutch boy with his finger in the dike, keeping the river of unfettered capitalism from washing us all away. If you were to pay attention to trade and where the money goes, Panama's a lesson in both. It's one of 8 leading tax havens in the world and was voted the best place to launder drug money in the Americas. As corporate execs siphon off our tax money for generations to come, what are they doing with the untaxed money they make on free trade? In an op-ed posted on TheHill.com, Representative Mike Michaud highlighted how Panama's industrial policy is premised on obtaining a comparative advantage by banning taxation of foreign corporations, hiding tax liabilities and transactions behind banking secrecy rules, and the ease with which U.S. and other firms can create unregulated subsidiaries. The Office of Management and Budget estimates that eliminating offshore loopholes could save U.S. taxpayers $210 billion over the coming decade, while the Senate Homeland Security Committee estimates the savings 5 times as great. In developing countries, the impact of tax evasion and avoidance is more severe. Global Financial Integrity estimates that $850 billion to $1 trillion a year is illegally shifted out of developing countries into Western economies. According to the World Bank, 60% of illicit cash flows from developing countries are through commercial tax evasion. A 2008 Christian Aid report asserts that because revenues lost to havens could be used for health care and education, nearly 1,000 children in the developing world die each day as a result of trade-related tax evasion. But the most damning projections of the Panama Agreement is on the U.S. International Trade Commission's own website. It says that the positive potential for the U.S. will be negligible, but import competition will likely lower their domestic beef, pork, rice, and grain production, shifting farmers to alternative crops and increasing imports. This is the same model that's created the global food crisis in the rest of Latin America. U.S. corporations can invade the financial sector, bid on expansion contracts for the Panama Canal, and can't be discriminated against by preferring Panamanians. It includes intellectual property rights, prevents generic drugs from being produced, and creates a stable environment for investors by giving them the right of expropriation. They can sue an international court for lost profits due to new labor or environmental laws. Either the Trade Commission doesn't expect anyone to actually read these agreements, or they're utterly shameless. Maybe both. This is the same law under NAFTA allowing Dow Chemical to sue Quebec for banning pesticide use on lawns. If you doubt this, try banning lawn pesticides in your county and see what happens. If you'd like to make a real difference in the wholesale, free trade, rape and pillage that we're funding, only to have the spoils squirreled away tax-free, call your representative. If that's Sam Farr, ask for his foreign policy aide, Mark Hansen. You might ask him how that Peru FTA worked out that I warned him about. I also talk about it in my episode, Third Generation Lapcats. This has been Teresa Caraggio with Third Paradigm. Thanks to Skidmark Bob for production and editing. Special thanks to Pete Bianco, host of The Ringer on RadioForAll.net, who sometimes plays my show after his at WHCL Hamilton College in Clinton, New York. He also does a 75-person CSA with 100 varieties of veggies. And thanks to Dana Feldman and Carolyn Israel for their thoughtful responses to Free Radio Santa Cruz issues. I also want to appreciate Dwayne Erickson's kind and perceptive email about my biblical research, picking up on a connection to the Joe Atwill book, Caesar's Messiah. We'll be elaborating on that in a future episode. Our last song is about Gaza. It's been a particularly brutal week in Palestine, but it could also be about Iraq, Afghanistan, the women of the Congo, or the peasant farmers of Latin America. This is Michael Hart with We Will Not Go Down. Thanks for listening.
A blinding flash of white light lit up the sky over Gaza tonight. People running for cover, not knowing whether they're dead or alive. They came with their tanks and their planes, with ravaging fiery flames, and nothing remains. Just a voice rising up in the smoky haze. We will not go down in the night without a fight. You can burn up our mosques and our homes and our schools, but our spirit will never die. We will not go down in Gaza tonight. Women and children alike, murdered and massacred night after night, while the so-called leaders of countries afar debated on who's wrong or right. But their powerless words were in vain, and the bombs fell down like acid rain. But through the tears and the blood and the pain, you could still hear that voice through the smoky haze. We will not go down in the night without a fight. You can burn up our mosques and our homes and our schools, but our spirit will never die. We will not go down in Gaza tonight. Tonight.